Good morning, this is AM, I'm Chris Yuleman. The Education Minister, Christopher Pyne's, taking a pugnacious approach to university deregulation, declaring that round two has already started. He lost round one yesterday when the Senate voted down his bill, and that defeat was decisive. The upper house rejected it without letting it get to the point where amendments could be considered. But Mr. Pyne is bringing in a new bill today to reboot his higher education plan. It will include some of the changes he's negotiated with the crossbenchers, and he'll put it to the Senate for a vote next year. Political correspondent Louise Yaxley reports.
Despite losing in the Senate yesterday, Mr. Pyne's not throwing in the towel. He says he's back for round two. This morning he'll introduce a new bill because he insists the changes are vitally important for the universities and the nation. But Labor's education spokesman Kim Carr says it's such a politically unpopular topic, the opposition's happy to have the issue drag on.
We'll fight this all the way through. The government's proposals are at their core fundamentally rotten. They're unfair, they're unnecessary, they are rushed. The real issue here will be that the next election will be around these issues. And we look forward to the contest, and we will hang these proposals around the necks of the Liberal Party because they are fundamentally unfair, unnecessary, and completely deceptive.
The defeated bill said universities would be able to set their own fees from January 2016. But this setback for the government means the uncertainty over deregulation will continue through next year while students are considering whether to sign up for degree courses. The Greens Senator Lee Rhiannon says that's confusing for them and the sector.
The uncertainty for students, prospective students, their families is considerable. For a few hours, there at least was some certainty. But the minister's arrogance is really doing a wrong thing by those students, also a wrong thing by how the universities are going to manage. What is their funding certainty for how they're going to manage their own budgets?
She says bringing the new bill in today means the government will still keep the savings of more than $4 billion on the books when it releases the mid-year economic update soon.
That this really is a budget bill. It was always about taking $5 billion out of the public university system, and now by getting it back in legislation, they're managing the embarrassment that they had because the bill was defeated and they can get that line item back in there.
Mr. Pyne signalling his determination by saying that great reform takes time. He says he has a great relationship with the crossbench and will keep lobbying them for their support. But his efforts so far have annoyed Palmer United Senate leader Glenn Lazarus, who said the minister was harassing him by inundating him with text messages.
We are opposed to higher education reforms for a number of reasons, and no amount of texting, chocolates and red roses from Christopher Pyne is going to change my mind or the mind of my fellow colleague, Senator D.O. Wang.
Mr. Pyne says he sent texts because Senator Lazarus was the only crossbencher to refuse to have meetings with him.
Political correspondent Louise Yaxley, and the man who now has to go back to the drawing board with the higher education reforms is Christopher Pyne, the Education Minister. Christopher Pyne, it's been a pretty messy end to the year for this government, hasn't it?
No. The Senate is what it is. We have to negotiate with the crossbenchers. There was a Telegraph poll about 2 weeks ago which said that 66% of the Australian public believed that the Senate was being obstructionist, not constructive. That makes it very difficult for the government, but Labor and the Greens could actually support good government policy in the same way as the Howard opposition did when Hawke and Keating were in power, but they've chosen instead to be politics first, people second, and that's why the end of the year often looks like this when we're negotiating with the crossbenchers in the Senate, but I think the government overall is going very well.
Well, you rarely reach the end of the year when $28 billion worth of your first budget is hung up in the Senate and major planks that you announced in the budget speech haven't gotten through.
Not true, in fact. 75% of the 400 measures in the budget have passed the Senate and the House of Representatives. The Labor Party had measures on their books for years that they had announced in the budget but never actually passed through the Senate because they didn't think they'd be able to. So it's not the case that that's not usually the case. Usually it is the case.
Aren't you arguing both things there then, saying 75% of things have gotten through but very major parts of the government's packages are being blocked.
No, that's what you said.
But you just said then that the Senate's being obstructionist, but 75% has gotten through. So
I thought you were referring to my higher education bill. In fact, you said that most of it hadn't gotten through by the end of the year, and I was correcting you.
75% of the government's program's gotten through, so therefore the Senate's working well?
Not in the terms of higher education, and I thought that's what this interview was about.
Certainly. So on higher education, have you given enough concessions in order to get your bill through?
Well, we will introduce a new reform bill this morning, which will pick up many of the issues that the crossbenchers raised in the Senate. 9 out of the 10 major measures from the former reform bill will be in it, but the indexation will be CPI, not the 10-year government bond rate. We'll establish a transition fund for universities, make sure that the Commonwealth scholarships are directed towards low SES students and rural and regional students. And I believe that the crossbenchers, looking at in a fresh way in the new year, I will hopefully have a different view. Big reform takes time, Chris. It's not something that just happens overnight. When it's important, it's also important that ministers keep trying.
Well, Universities Australia says the concessions are insufficient to satisfy calls from the sector for substantial changes to improve fairness and affordability.
Universities Australia has been superb in its support of the government. One of the achievements in the last 7 months since the budget has been uniting the university sector behind reform. Of course, they will always want more, and we'll keep talking to them over the summer, but they asked the Senate to pass the bill. They asked the crossbenchers to pass the bill. Every single university representative organisation did, so you'd have to say on balance they must be pretty supportive of the government.
Is the 20% cut to universities' funding non-negotiable?
We'll continue to talk to the sector and the crossbenchers over the summer, and we'll return in February and debate that bill. That's part of it. We'll see what happens when we return in February.
Now, you want the consumer watchdog to have a role to oversee fees to make sure that they don't get out of control. How will that work?
Well, the ACCC currently has power over things like looking at fuel prices and stevedoring costs, so it's not unusual for the ACCC to have that kind of oversight role. We'll ask them to look at the fees being set by universities to ensure there's no gouging of students. But I'm very confident with the extreme competition that will exist in the sector, with non-university higher education providers being given access to the Commonwealth Grant Scheme, that the competition will force fees down, and the ACCC will have little to do. But if there is any gouging, the ACCC will be there to protect students.
If it has little to do, then doesn't it fall into the category of fuel watch or grocery watch, the things that you criticised of the Rudd and Gillard?
Well, fuel prices are falling down, and it's not fuel watch or price watch. In fact, it is
the ACCC.
It is the ACCC, which is an entirely different kettle of fish. But you know, if you want to criticise the ACCC now, I guess that's a matter for you. But I think the ACCC does a very good job.
But just wondering whether or not it'll have any function at all keeping prices down.
I think competition is the most valid way of keeping prices down, and I'm going to massively increase competition by introducing about 140 new non-university higher education providers into the system, and the ACCC will also be there as a safety net to protect students.
Did you do enough to prepare the ground for this change? Some people, the first they would have known about it was with the May budget.
I started talking about the need for deregulation in February this year, may have even been late January, in fact, at my speech at the University's Australia Conference.
But as you say, this is great change.
It is, and I've been talking about it for almost an entire year. Big reform, important reform, does take time, and that's why I'm not in the least bit dismayed about the defeat in the Senate yesterday, and that's why I'm introducing a new reform bill today, because I'm absolutely determined to have a world-class university sector, and I'm determined to give students the best quality education to as many Australians as who want it as possible.
You may well be determined, but do you believe that in the end you'll garner the numbers that you need to get this through the Senate?
Yes, I definitely do.
And what gives you that confidence, given yesterday's experience?
Because there is an inevitability about necessary reform. Necessary reform happens, and this will happen.
What if the senators behave in a puerile way? I would have thought that Glenn Lazarus complaining about the fact that you were trying to talk to him about this bill would have been a sign that this Senate is particularly difficult to deal with.
I have utmost respect for all the crossbench senators, Chris.
Why do they just treat you then with contempt? You have to say that in some of the ways that you've been treated by this Senate have been contemptuous.
Well, I have great respect for all the crossbench senators. Senator Lazarus has not met with me to discuss this bill.
And surely that is contemptuous.
I've asked him many times since he was elected on July the 1st, and so either writing letters to him, which I've done, and communicating with SMS was the only way I felt that I could communicate with him. He then told Samantha Maiden I could SMS him as much as I wanted to, so I'm as confused as the next bloke about
Samantha
what he thinks I should
be
doing.
Journalist, so you're negotiating through journalists with the head of the PUP in the Senate.
Perhaps you should raise that with Senator Lazarus.
Well, we would if we could, but we can't because he won't speak to us either.
And he's speaking to Fran Kelly this morning, so perhaps she could ask him.
Absolutely, but don't you think that he should be speaking to you directly?
I would love to talk to Senator Lazarus. I have a great relationship with the other crossbenchers. I look forward to talking to them all over and over again. Sometimes we don't agree. Some people take disagreement the wrong way. I never do. My view is that one conversation finishes, another one begins.
Now, there's growing frustration on your own backbench at the way the government is doing at the moment, and the Australian's reporting today that your own Economics Committee has refused to approve a draft bill to set up the Medical Research Future Fund. So that's not a great sign, is it?
Well, I'm not aware of that story. I mean, I've read it this morning, but I'm not aware of the circumstances around it. Our processes of the party are that backbench committees look at the government legislation. If they feel that they need more time, good luck to them. So they should.
Now, finally, at the end of every year, during the Rudd-Gillard years, I remember being told by people that things would be better next year. Is that your hope?
I think we've had a great year. I think we've had a terrific year. We've done tremendous things this year. We've abolished the carbon tax. We've abolished the mining tax. We've stopped the boats. We've settled 3 free trade agreements with Korea, Japan and China. We're getting the economy back on track. Confidence is lifting in Australia. I think we'll have a great Christmas, and I think this first year of the government has been a year of great achievement.
Christopher Pyne, we'll leave it there. Thank you.
It's always a pleasure.
The Education Minister, Christopher Pyne. And a short time ago, Glenn Lazarus spoke with Fran Kelly on Radio National Breakfast. Senator Lazarus says he's got firm ideas about what he wants for higher education.
Well, as I said, if it's got any indication of cutting funds to the universities and the deregulation of university fees, which will then give the potential to increase university fees, I won't be voting for it. Look, Christopher Pyne, I think he's a good minister. I think he's a nice guy. But I've got 3 children. 2 have just graduated from university. They have hex fee. They have debt. I'd hate to think that debt could increase by 20%, 30%, 40%, 50% or whatever the case may be. Because they will be paying those hex fees off over a number of years, which will affect some of the decisions they make. And I just don't feel as though the young people of Australia need that added burden.
The leader of the Palmer United Party in the Senate, Senator Glenn Lazarus. You're listening to AM, and it's coming up to 23 minutes past 7. Stay with us because ahead, the Abbott government moves to crack down on cyberbullying. The Somalia-based Al-Shabaab terrorist group has once again crossed the border south and massacred Kenyans. 36 workers at an isolated quarry were killed in the middle of the night, some shot, others beheaded. It's the second attack in just over a week. Africa correspondent Martin Cudahy is in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Al-Shabaab has quickly claimed responsibility for this latest atrocity. 10 of its fighters ambushed a workers' camp in Mandera County, somewhere between 1 and 2 in the morning. They identified the Muslims and then set them free. The remaining 36 quarry labourers were shot in the head at point-blank range. Photos from the scene show broken bodies on a dusty and rocky slope.
Obvious intent is to create hostility and suspicion across ethnic and religious lines and to drive non-Muslims from certain parts of this country.
Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta, addressed his nation after the attack, a task he's now familiar with.
Terrorism and violent crime are a grave threat to our nation. We are in a war against terrorists in and outside our country.
It's the second such attack in 10 days. Early last week, terrorists stopped a bus in the same county. Once again, heavily armed fighters identified the Muslims, set them free, and then proceeded to kill the remaining passengers. 28 were murdered beside a muddy road. Kenyans have taken to the streets, angry that their government is not protecting them. Kelvin Mulwa organised a recent modestly attended protest.
They talk almost every time and again, but there's no action. You see, what Kenyans want is not a talk. We want actions. If you say that you are going to apprehend them, can we see?
In the wake of these latest attacks, the president has replaced his much maligned Interior Minister, Joseph Olelenku, and the Chief of Police, David Kamayo. The now former top cop insists he wasn't pushed.
Actually, this is a personal decision that I made. It is not a matter of running away on anything else, but it's always good to leave office when you are still energetic and you do other things.
But Kenyans are sick of security politics. There have been too many empty promises, not enough action. And Al-Shabaab has promised more attacks because Kenyan troops remain in Somalia as part of an African Union mission. So in the capital, fears are once again rising that terrorists will strike again in the suburbs. In Nairobi, this is Martin Karahi for AM.
Social media sites will be targeted under plans by the Abbott government to crack down on the cyberbullying of children. The government will today introduce a bill into Parliament to appoint a commissioner with the power to order large social media services and individuals to remove offensive material posted online. Technology companies face fines of $17,000 a day if material targeting a child is not removed, and individuals face legal action under existing laws. Sue Lannan reports.
Social media sites like Facebook are a big part of most children's lives. But university researchers say around 1 in 5 older children in Australia has been bullied online. Now, the federal government plans to appoint a Children's eSafety Commissioner to crack down on online bullying under the Enhancing Online Safety for Children Bill 2014. Paul Fletcher is the Parliamentary Secretary to the Communications Minister.
Children's eSafety Commissioner issues a notice requiring a large social media service to take down this cyberbullying material targeted at an Australian child. Then, obviously, the service has a very strong incentive to do so because it is exposed to this fine for each day that it does not respond to that notice.
Technology companies face fines of $17,000 a day if they don't respond to a takedown notice. Paul Fletcher says the Children's Commissioner will take complaints from parents and be able to force individuals to take down offensive posts.
That notice can ask the person to remove the material, to apologise, to refrain from posting similar material targeted at the child who complained. Now, if the recipient of the notice fails to respond, then the Commissioner will have the power to go to court and seek an injunction. The other path that will be open to the Commissioner to take will be to refer then the matter to police. If a complaint's made to the Children's eSafety Commissioner and the Commissioner then refers it to police, then it's much more likely that the police will take it seriously.
Internet companies like Google and Microsoft say that existing state and territory laws already outlaw cyberbullying. They're opposed to the forced removal of material. Paul Fletcher denies there will be over-regulation.
Look, we've had vigorous and continuing engagement with certainly Microsoft, Yahoo 7, Facebook, Google, Twitter and other players. I do want to acknowledge here that the large social media services have significantly increased the amount of resources they allocate to dealing with complaints of cyberbullying and other such content. We are conscious of not imposing any more additional regulatory burden than is necessary to keep Australian children safe online.
Organisations such as the Australian Human Rights Commission and the Law Council have also raised freedom of speech concerns. They're worried that the definition of cyberbullying material could be too broad. Paul Fletcher says the government has listened to feedback about the draft law.
We've certainly worked through very carefully what the definition of cyberbullying material targeted at an Australian child is. And it's important that we strike the right balance. We don't want to be over-regulating, so material that is merely frivolous. On the other hand, this is designed to be a set of effective regulatory tools to produce a rapid response when a child is being exposed to cyberbullying, not least because the strong evidence is that when children are subject to cyberbullying, they feel very much like they're being humiliated or intimidated in the public view, given the nature of social media, that lots of other people can see it, and that what they're after most of all is to get the material taken down quickly.
Parliamentary Secretary to the Communications Minister, Paul Fletcher, ending that report by Sue Lannan. To finance in Wall Street is 0.5% higher on speculation that the US economy is strong enough to withstand an interest rate rise. Stocks across Europe rose, with the European Central Bank expected to step in with more economic stimulus, and the dollar is lower this morning at 84.46 US cents. I'm Chris Yeoman. That's AM for today.